I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors, one of whom you have heard from previously, Kaori Fujishiro, and our colleague in Germany, Anna-Katrin Hoppe, and also to NIOSH and Stanford University for funding this study. Did I just hit this? And we have no conflicts of interest to disclose. As will probably be no surprise to you all in the audience, the U.S. workforce is becoming increasingly diverse. So in 2005, 70% of the workforce was white, non-Hispanic. It's estimated that by the year 2050, 51% of the workforce will be white, non-Hispanic, with a tremendous growth in the proportion that is Hispanic from 13% to 25%, and also a smaller, more modest increase in the proportion that are African American. Over the last decades, organizational researchers have investigated the effects of ethnic and racial diversity on work processes, finding, for the most part, that ethnic and racial diversity is negatively associated with work outcomes, so that it's associated with poorer health performance, increased interpersonal conflict, and less effective communication within work groups. Also, at the individual employee level, diversity is associated with lower organizational commitment and lower job satisfaction. And what we wanted to do in this study was to extend this research to look at how ethnic and racial diversity in the workplace affects employee well-being. The theoretical background for our study is taking an approach of relational demography, whereas much of the previous research investigated the influence of ethnic and racial composition of the workplace per se. The relational demography approach has focused on the extent to which a worker has similar others in the workplace. And for this approach, the main independent variable is demographic similarity, or the proportion of coworkers who are of the same ethnicity or race as the respondent. The theoretical underpinning for the study is indeed social identity theory, where, where people identify with others who are similar to themselves, and those similar others create one's in-group. And the larger one's in-group, the more resources, are accessible to you, because we tend to prefer to socialize, to engage in social exchanges with other employees in our in-group. And the greater one's access to resources, the better one's well-being. So this is the sort of traditional social identity theory. But social identity theory has since been expanded to also include the notion of power and status differences, that not all in-groups and out-groups are the same, and that indeed members of low status in-groups may actually prefer members of higher status out-groups, so that if the out-group, for you personally, the out-group is the group that has more resources, is more powerful, has more control over decision-making, the hypotheses that stem from social identity theory may actually not hold. And So this leads to the two following research questions. To what extent is demographic similarity associated with employee well-being? And to what extent does the association between demographic similarity and employee well-being differ for employees who belong to different ethnic and racial groups? Before I get started with talking further about the study, I do want to point out something that you should keep in mind, which is that this notion of demographic similarities, or the proportion of employees similar to oneself, that the distribution of this differs across different ethnic and racial groups. We still have a majority group in this country, and minority groups. And in our particular study, this is what the distribution looked like for the white, African American, and Latino employees. So that the range of demographic similarity for white employees was between sort of 30% of one's fellow employees are white, up to 97% of one's fellow employees are white. Whereas for the African American employees and Latino employees, it tended to range more from about 5% to 50 or 60%. So there's some overlap, but there's some unique aspects to the distribution. So here's our conceptual framework. It's a multi-level model, and our analysis used hierarchical linear modeling to assess the relationships proposed here. As the dependent variables, or the outcome variables, we looked at job satisfaction, which was measured through four survey items that were adopted from the NIOSH Generic Job Stress Questionnaire. And then we also looked at low back health. The employees that participated in these studies, in this study, were warehouse workers. And low back health is a very important health outcome for these employees. Our measure of low back health is not a self-reported measure. Instead, it's an objective measure measured through something called the lumbar motion monitor, which is an electrogoniometer designed by our colleague Bill Maris at Ohio State University to quantify dynamic trunk motion performance. So you put on this sort of this thing that looks almost like an exoskeleton and do certain amounts of movements, controlled movements, and it measures the velocity and acceleration of movement along different planes. This data is consolidated into an algorithm which then ranges from 0 to 1, with numbers closer to 1 indicating healthier low back function and lower numbers indicating impaired low back function. Okay. And then, of course, our main independent variable is demographic similarity, which is constructed from looking at each employee's own race or ethnicity, as well as the composition of the workforce in their own workplace, in their warehouse that they are employed in. And then we looked at other typical psychosocial job characteristics in the model at the individual level, coworker support at the job level, workload, job control, which you heard about earlier in this session. We also looked at physical exertions, which were also not measured through self-report, but were measured by a certified ergonomist who looked at the frequency of exertions, the duration of those exertions, the force or weight entailed in the exertions, along with how far away from the body they were done and how far up from the ground. And basically brought this data together, compared it to threshold limit values so that we have a variable that looks at the number of exertions that are above these threshold limit values that would tend to be more associated with low back injury. And at the workplace level, we have a measure of management fairness, which is measured through self-report survey, 21 items, that was developed specifically for this project that incorporates distributive, procedural, and interpersonal justice. So our design is a cross-sectional design where we have our 383 employees and we measure demographic similarity, their own ethnicity, coworker support. At the job, we have 69 different jobs where we looked at workload, physical demands, and job control. And then in these 69 jobs, we're nested within 9 warehouses where we measured management fairness. Just a little bit about the sample of employees used in this study. Of our 383 employees, 222 of them were white, 94 African American, and 63 were Latino. Most of those Latinos were first generation immigrants. As you can tell, they're overwhelmingly male. And their average age is around 35 years old. The Latinos were had considerably less education and less job tenure, and thus we included those variables as controls in all of our further analyses. Okay, so let's first look at our analysis where we use job satisfaction as our dependent variable. And as you can see here, demographic similarity is positively associated with job satisfaction. So that the higher proportion of coworkers in your workplace who are ethnically or racially similar to yourself, the higher your job satisfaction is likely to be. Latinos were shown to have substantially higher job satisfaction than white employees, who are the omitted category here. But what's most interesting is when we incorporate the interaction and look at these, the relationship between demographic similarity and job satisfaction for each of the racial or ethnic groups. And that's what's shown here. So you can see for the white employees, which is the darker blue line with the triangles, that basically demographic similarity, the more white workers there are in the workplace, the more satisfied they are. Demographic similarity had very little relationship to job satisfaction for the African American employees, and the relationship for Latinos was a negative association, so that the more Latino workers there were in one's workplace, the lower job satisfaction was likely to be. So, white workers' demographic similarity is positively associated with job satisfaction, and this is consistent with the traditional social identity theory. For Latino workers, demographic similarity is negatively associated, suggesting perhaps that Latinos may benefit from the presence of more resources in white-dominated workplaces. And also perhaps that working in white-dominated workplaces could be an indicator, is perceived as better social standing for these Latinos, particularly keeping in mind that they're first-generation immigrants for the most part. So that kind of fit with our sort of understanding of what we would see. And I'd like to sort of stop my talk here, but that wouldn't be very honest. So when I show you our analyses for low back health, you will notice something a little different. So first of all, here, overall, we have demographic similarity being negatively associated with low back health, and Latinos experiencing significantly worse low back health than the white employees. But now, you'll see that again, we have statistically significant interactions here. Here, for the whites, remember, as demographic similarity went up, job satisfaction went up. But when we look at this low back health measured in this more objective low back functioning way, not through asking about symptoms, we see that for white employees, as demographic similarity goes up, low back health is reduced. So a lower score on low back health means worse functioning, more likely to be impaired. And for the Latinos and the African Americans, as demographic similarity goes up, so does their low back health. So to be perfectly frank, this was not what we were expecting to see. One possibility, and we're very open to ideas that other people might have, but is that within the same workplaces and the same jobs, all of these folks are involved in warehouse work. And we had a lot of variables controlling for various job characteristics. So within these, you know, same jobs, perhaps the Latino and African American employees, they may tend to perform tasks that negatively affect their low back health more often than do white employees. So that when those Latino and African American employees are not there, white employees are then doing those tasks, and that then sort of pulls down their low back health. But it's our own post hoc explanation. And as I said, we're open to other ideas. But clearly, our findings show different reactions to demographic similarity for white employees than for racial or ethnic minority employees. And much of the early research was very focused on the response to diversity of white employees, of majority employees. And we clearly see that we need to look at the reactions of other racial and ethnic groups. And this is very much in concert with what has been expressed in the literature, something called the asymmetry hypothesis. But we think our study also raises two questions. What processes other than social identity theory may be operating when we look at these associations of demographic similarity with health outcomes? And what does this suggest in terms of how we should be managing the growing diversity in the workforce in order to promote employee health and well-being? Thank you.
We have time for some questions. Dr. Berman?
One of the reasons is often that could be that, so remember, if you're working with your wife and working among wives, you have more resources available. Mm-hmm. Even if you have a low back pain, you are still able to continue working rather than getting on the court because you have somebody else to help you out. Whereas,
So sort of a, if indeed you are getting more social support, right, more instrumental support, more help and aid from other members of your in-group, that you're saying now for the white workers?
Yeah, if you're able to be in the employment, you're able to maintain, you're still going to work on modified duty.
So it's a selection effect that those folks stay in the study as opposed to sort of not being there because they are off on disability. Yeah, so interesting. And we can think about if there's any way with our particular database we might be able to, you know, to sort of look at that, or certainly as a research question for the future. What's interesting, and I do think that, this is sort of the most mystical slide. Why do we not see that, you know, with the Latinos and African Americans? Perhaps because different mechanisms are explaining these relationships for the different groups. And maybe it has to do with, sort of the different place along the distribution of demographic similarity. We do not have any workplaces here that are 90% African American or 90% Latino.
One question here, and then I'll take that.
Yes. Chris Olson, Industrial Agency at Johns Hopkins. I have a question about the home life of the workers and how that might relate to their low back health, because that's somewhat of a physical problem. And how do you think their home life and maybe what they're doing in their leisure time affects their low back health?
Yeah. And clearly, you know, there are studies that show that what you do in your leisure time affects your low back health. The question is, and we do not have measures of that in this study, unfortunately, the question is, would those differ across groups here? And perhaps, but remember that they are all warehouse workers, you know, they're all making relatively similar amounts of money. So there might not be as much variety as if you were looking across like a population-based study, you know, like the MESA study that we heard about earlier. But it's a good point.
Lots of questions. Before I start, back in the corner.
This is an overstretch. My real question is, again, when you're only looking at a handful of workplaces, even among warehouse workers who are working in an almost exclusively minority employment situation may be different than other sections of workforces. And actually, if you reflected this at the 0.5, you're reflecting the greatest diversity versus homogeneity, that actually all of them would then, on a reflected, be going up, that would suggest that more integrated workplaces with more diversity perhaps have better occupational health environments than more segregated environments. But that's kind of a stretch. But the point being is that even if they're all warehouse workers, we've been in different warehouses, not all warehouses are the same, and certainly there is that warehouse or employment effect, and I'm not sure your one high-level notion of management is enough to capture what might be differences across the warehouse.
Yeah. I agree with both your points. I've definitely been trying to sell to my co-authors the whole idea of, you know, if you look at this, there is this middle place, which is sort of the more integrated workplace, right? The most diverse workplace where everybody sort of is doing the best, you know. At this point, you know, it's, as you say, a stretch, but interesting to think about. But the other thing is, as far as we know, this is one of the first studies to look at some of these types of relationships and hypotheses, particularly when we have a health outcome measured not through self-report, and our demographic similarity is not through self-report. So it is suggestive, but it is only 9 warehouses. It turns out that we did have a fair amount of variation in terms of the workforce diversity in these warehouses, but clearly a larger study would be needed from this point.
It is a delightful study, and as you can see from the hands, a stimulating one in terms of thinking about a variety of issues raised here. Several have come to mind that I don't know that your data
Absolutely.
And then the other thing that strikes me that this might call for, that might call for, is some social network analysis that is more directly examined the question of what are the relationships between workers during work. There's some very interesting studies from Denmark on sanitary workers which suggest that with respect to age that there is a relief by the workers in an unspoken way to take off the heavy burden from the older workers in order that they can stay at work. So this kind of operation with social network analysis might be helpful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that would be an excellent, you know, sort of follow-up study to do. Yeah, it's also with this whole idea of task, you know, we controlled for, you know, physical exertion stuff. We controlled for, you know, the typical sort of workload and job control. So, I mean, we're really saying, you know, maybe there's something else, you know, but we don't know. Yeah, so to try to develop a study that could look at that more closely might also be useful.
Well, we have lots of questions. In the interest of fairness, is there anybody who hasn't asked a question yet today that has a question now?
Fairness, we like fairness.
Anybody? Okay, so then we'll go back through stuff.
I can kind of follow up on Dave's comment. I was thinking the same thing that Tim was saying about health center, that since the lumbar motion monitor is really judging risk for yourself in a lot of ways.
Yes.
What the motions are and so on.
Yes.
It'd be correlated with the ergonomics evaluation, I assume, fairly highly. That in more homogenous white workplaces, there might be more job sharing and more kind of rotation as opposed to segregation or bad jobs among the minorities. So I don't know if you have data on kind of rotation task analysis.
Yeah, both Calry and I spent time in these warehouses, and there was not much rotation.
Most workers did the same thing.
That's a good thought, though.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.